regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with my friend Laura Carno from Faster Colorado. I wrote about this editorial at the Denver Post yesterday at Bearing Arms, but I wanted to have Laura on because it bothered me so much to see, as I told her, the media willfully ignore a solution to the challenge of having an armed presence on every campus in the state of Colorado. And so I wanted, you might know Faster Colorado, you might know Laura Carno if you've been a longtime listener or viewer to this program, but I wanted to have her on to respond to the Denver Post, but I also wanted to get an update on what Faster Colorado is doing. This is, if you're not aware, Faster Colorado, this is a program that trains armed school staff, mostly in Colorado, though I think they have worked with some Wyoming school districts as well. These are volunteers. They are vetted. They have, expressed an interest in serving as that first line of defense in case of a school attack. Faster Colorado has trained hundreds, if not thousands, of educators at this point. So the fact that the Denver Post has completely ignored Faster Colorado in their call for armed presence on campus, it really rubbed me the wrong way. And it was a great conversation with Laura. I'm glad she was able to sit down with us for a couple of minutes, but take a look and a listen. Laura, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's so good to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
I wish it were under better circumstances. Obviously we're talking about another school shooting in Colorado. And I wrote about this at Bearing Arms yesterday because I was so bothered by this. The Denver Post comes out with this editorial. And as I said in my post, they got it half right, right? The Denver Post said there needs to be an armed presence on every campus in Colorado. But what they specifically said is there needs to be a school resource officer on every campus in Colorado. And they noted the financial and logistical difficulties in doing so, but they said, the editorial board said, we don't see any other option. Well, there is another option, and I think they are willfully blind if they don't see that other option, right? Because Faster Colorado has been around for how long now?
Yeah, this is our ninth year of training that we'll be wrapping up in November. So we've been around for a little while.
And do you have any idea how many districts in Colorado already have armed school staff in place?
Yeah, at the end of this training year, we'll be right at either 49 or 50. I need to go back and do my count. It's been a little busy, but I'm calling it nearly 50.
Schools or school districts?
Schools in 50 districts. So I'm counting, just to be clear, I'm counting charter schools that are sitting in a district that isn't armed, but they are armed in that district. I'd say about 39 or 40 probably are traditional districts, though, where we have the whole district rural. Let's be clear on that.
Right.
They're mostly rural school districts. Yeah.
Okay. So, and again, this, when the Post talks about how, it's a logistical and financial a challenge for every school district to put a school resource officer in place, they're exactly right. And that's one of the reasons why Faster Colorado exists, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. These are our employees that are already hired by the district, paid for by the district. They are already doing a job, whether it's the janitor or the principal or whoever. They just happen to be doing it while they're concealed carrying. And the Denver Post, by the way, Cam, has covered us in the past. There's another station here, Colorado Public Radio, who has covered us in the past. And they said, there seem to be gaps. I wonder what the gaps are and how can we fill the gap? Never mentioning that, there's a very popular policy that, maybe 9 years ago seemed extreme to some people, but it's very mainstream now. The number of people mentioning on social media and tagging us at Faster Colorado that here's a better way, I think this would be a good solution, people I've never heard of and never met before. And that's, to me, what's interesting is, back in the day, it was, my friends in close circle that were tagging us on social media, but we're not quite ubiquitous, but we're in so many places now that lots of people have heard of us. And, you know, when you said willfully, I think that's the key word. I think they're purposely ignoring the solution. Since you pointed out that Denver Post editorial to me, we're going to be talking to them today to see if we can do a response, because I think their editorial deserves a response.
Oh, fantastic. I am glad to hear that. And I'm looking forward to covering that at Bearing Arms. If they won't print it, we will. I'll tell you that right now.
Yes. Thank you.
So, you know, and in the wake of the shooting at Evergreen, where again, you know, like the more we're learning about this, Laura, 9 minutes. 9 minutes it took for police to get there, right? They're normally, I guess there is a school resource officer that is available unless they're called away, right, on another call. And that was what happened. So the school resource officer who is there on campus sometimes had a call off campus that they had to respond to. So there was no law enforcement presence. And again, it took 9 minutes for police to respond. I'm not saying they were dilly-dallying. I'm sure they got there as fast as they could, but 9 minutes was as fast as they could get there. So for almost 10 minutes, you've got this 16-year-old who is, you know, able to repeatedly reload the revolver that he had, fire multiple shots. Thankfully, you know, there were other security precautions in place, right? I mean, there were locked doors. This a student could not get entry to a lot of these classrooms. And nobody suggests anything that armed school staff is the only security layer that needs to be in place, right? But certainly, when you have an armed presence on campus who can respond to a threat, in addition to those other security measures, that's how you save as many lives as possible.
Yeah, and it is multi-layered. It's the exact right language. You know, we patrol the perimeter. We see if strangers are parking in our parking lots, we lock the doors. We have armed staff for, God forbid, the worst possible scenario. It's not used in most scenarios. Obviously, it's in you know, just the minutest of scenarios. That 9 minutes is really interesting too, Cam. What the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office has been talking about is the 2 minute response time. They got 911 calls, and then within 2 minutes, there was a deputy there. They're not accounting for shots fired to when they got their 911 calls. And that's what accounts for that larger time period. And that's what we need to look at, because the killing, if God forbid they didn't have good lockdown procedures that kept him from getting into more classrooms, that would have been even a bigger catastrophe. You know, two students got shot. Their conditions seem to be improving individually, but they're not completely out of the woods yet. I'm still in the hospital. It could have been much worse. And the thing that a lot of people don't look at is, well, and gosh, I hear the strangest things after these. My inbox gets filled up. I've heard after this one, thankfully, no children were killed. And that is true. But we have two very traumatized families whose kids were shot. And everybody in that school is traumatized, staff and children. Their lives will never be the same. Nobody gets out of this unscathed. Yes, it's good that nobody died, absolutely. But that doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean that this wasn't a big deal. It won't go into the annals of mass school shootings because we didn't have four people get shot or killed. But these, we have the answer. These things need to be stopped.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, again, you talk about you're hearing people or seeing people who you have no connection to who are, you know, talking about Faster Colorado. Your inbox is filled. Have you heard from school districts in Colorado in the wake of this shooting saying, OK, this is something that we want to investigate now?
Yeah. And the timing has been so interesting, Cam, with it happening within the same hour as Charlie Kirk's assassination. I think that, I mean, obviously there's always an enhanced response from people when there's a school shooting anywhere than more if there's a school shooting in Colorado. But this is, I haven't seen this since like the Parkland area, this level of response to Faster Colorado. And I think it's because we have the Charlie Kirk killer, the Evergreen High School shooter, and there's some commonalities in people's minds. What has happened to our youth? How are they being radicalized by some ideology that makes them think that killing a bunch of innocent people is the solution to this? So it is a very, very heightened level of concern, especially in Jefferson County. I've heard from parents who say, I'm going to start something. I'm going to start something. I'm going to start something. And I'm helping to connect some people who, you know, might not know each other. I think at the next school board meeting is in October. And I think there's going to be a pretty big presence of parents who are very educated in all of the possible things that could be done to keep kids safe. There's obviously a lot of call for school resource officers, but there's never going to be enough. And even if there was one full-time in every single school, that person has to go to the restroom. That person has to, you know, be at the other end of the school. And we've seen shootings where there is a school resource officer, the killer starts way at the other end of the school, and it's never going to save that first child. So layering with school resource officers plus additional concealed carry armed staff that nobody knows who they are is going to keep them as safe as possible.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, that's buttressed by research from the Homeland Security Institute at Purdue University. We've talked with Dr. James Eric Dietz about this on multiple occasions, and that research isn't exactly new. I mean, I was still at NRA News when his first research on this came out. So again, we know what works, right? We know what is effective. It is a matter of doing so, even if the idea of, you know, having armed school staff in place makes some people uncomfortable. The idea of a school shooting taking place with a 9-minute response time, I think, should make people more uncomfortable. So are you concerned at all, Laura, that the legislature is going to take aim at the ability for school districts to have armed staff? Because I know last year we saw this bill that ultimately resulted in campus carry being repealed, right, on higher ed, college, university campuses, something that had been in place for, what, I guess, almost 2 decades.
Right.
Without issue, by the way. But they said, nope, no more. Can that happen? Are you concerned that the Democrats looking to do something at the state capitol in Denver are going to actually make it impossible for school districts to have armed school staff on campus?
Yeah, and that's always the risk. 2 years ago when that bill showed up, that was eventually significantly watered down, the bill sponsor had to withdraw her bill because she couldn't get it past a Democrat committee. And that's because of the work we did at Faster Colorado. We hired a lobbyist that year because we couldn't risk all of these school districts all of a sudden becoming unarmed and being publicly unarmed or disarmed. And so for the foreseeable future, we are going to have to employ a lobbyist. What's interesting is, you know, there are some other organizations that do prevent individuals that provide training here and there to armed school security teams. I have yet to have them, you know, pitch in for the lobbyist. We're really bearing the brunt of that ourselves, but we have to stay vigilant. That was one of my first thoughts in the days following Evergreen was, you know, we're going to have a do something bill again. And, batten down the hatches. We're going to have another fight on our hands. And we have a great lobbyist who also works with charter schools, also works with rural schools, and was able to help us pull together a really good coalition to defeat it last time. But none of that's ever sure. So, lobbying is in our future forever, I think.
Okay. Well, to that end, I mean, listen, you know, you all are providing training for armed school staff. That costs money. Lobbyists cost money to keep you all in a position where you can provide that training. How can folks help support Faster Colorado, either Colorado residents or folks living outside the state? How can we step up?
Yeah. FasterColorado.org is our website. A couple of ways you can make just regular donations. We are a 501c3. We are also running a sweepstakes for a side of beef and some guns and other fun stuff. That sweepstakes we can do nationwide now. So wherever you're listening. Yeah, raffles used to be just Colorado, but now we're doing sweepstakes, which is nationwide, which is really helpful. And that share with everybody. It's, you know, the entries are very inexpensive, and you might win some cool stuff and help us out at Faster. And then the other thing we're always looking for is sponsorships. If you have a company that wants to be associated with this longstanding and very reputable training program, we'd love to talk to you. There's a sponsorship portion of our website. You can click on that and we can chat.
All right. FasterColorado.org. Laura Carno, Again, thank you for all of the work that that you continue to do there, not only to, you know, protect our liberties, but to protect our kids in the state of Colorado. And it's been too long since we had the chance to talk. So
yes,
we will not go months and months before we have you back again. I'd love to have you back in the very near future.
Okay, that's a deal.
All right. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks.
And thanks again to Laura for joining us on the program. I'm really glad now that I reached out to her. I didn't know that she hadn't seen that Denver Post editorial, and I'm going to be very pleased. I'm going to be very upset if the Denver Post does not give them the space to talk about Faster Colorado. But as I said, if they don't, we will certainly run that column at Bearing Arms. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. Let's start there with a case out of Dallas. Fox News in, this is Fox 4 in Dallas with the headline, second arrest made in fatal Dallas carjacking, both face capital murder charge. We're going to be talking about one of these individuals in particular. The carjacking happened last month in Northwest Dallas. 23-year-old Jeremiah Grease and 22-year-old Rocky Mejia Jr., both arrested and charged with capital murder. Mejia is also facing probation violation charges and assault charge, and a charge from Garland, Texas. He is being held in the Dallas County Jail on a combined bond of $510,000. Grease, meanwhile, is being held on a $650,000 bond. So Fox News says it was August 18th, 34-year-old Juan Ricardo Hernandez Esparza sitting in his vehicle in the parking lot of an apartment complex in Dallas. He's on a video chat with his friend. And the friend hears somebody say, "Get out of the vehicle," in Spanish. And then they heard Hernandez Esparza say, "Wait, I live here," in Spanish. Friend told police she couldn't see Hernandez Esparza on video chat, but she believes the phone fell. And then she heard a scuffle. She heard a gunshot. She saw something reflective on the screen, and then the chat ended. So she called another person who lives at the same apartment complex, asked him to check on her friend. They went outside. They saw Hernandez Esparza lying unconscious on the ground, and they were able to call police. They arrived at 3:31 in the morning. They took Hernandez Esparza to the hospital, but he was pronounced dead at 5:48, August 18th. A couple of days later, they find his vehicle. They believe that it was used in connection to an aggravated robbery offense actually multiple ones in Dallas, Texas, as well as Plano, Texas. License plate had been switched. They were able to use surveillance video and databases, they say, to connect the crime to Mejia. Mejia has a lengthy criminal history in Dallas County. Fox 4 reports that over the past 5 years, it's just in the last 5 years, keep in mind, he's 22 years old, right? Aggravated robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, evading arrests, and multiple probation violations. He also, again, had that open charge out of Garland, Texas, for allegedly assaulting a family member. Fox News says, according to jail records, he was likely out on bond when he was arrested. So here's the question. If he has arrests for aggravated robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, evading arrest, multiple probation violations, but the multiple probation violations means that he's been convicted of something over the past 5 years, right? And so then the question becomes, how does somebody committing these violent crimes get released so soon and then get arrested again, get out on bond, get arrested again, get out on bond? Is this a case of the criminal justice system not being able to keep up with Mejia's alleged crimes? And if so, why not? What are the reasons for the delays here? I mean, I'm looking at 8 different mugshots for this guy over the past 5 years. That's a problem. That should not have happened. And again, we don't know if Mejia was ever sentenced to prison for aggravated robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Both of those charges should have resulted in some significant prison time. And it appears that that was not the case. And Esparza, again, out and allegedly able to commit this carjacking and murder a month ago. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where police say a man was shot after, quote, violently assaulting a family in their home. This happened on Monday night. Actually, I guess Monday morning, about 2 o'clock Monday morning. So, you know, we can say late Sunday night. Police responded to reports of a shooting at a home on Orchid Drive. When they got there, they found an individual named Jonathan Littell Smith who had been shot. He was taken to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead of his injuries. Police say that Smith is believed to have been, quote, violently assaulting family members, and that a person in the home fired a gun in order to stop the violent behavior. District Attorney Jim O'Neill says that he's declining to file charges because he and investigators believe that this is a case of self-defense. We don't have, again, a lot of information here. It sounds like Smith may have been assaulting his own family members when he was shot and killed. We don't know if this was, you know, a targeted attack. We don't know the circumstances, but again, it sounds like the DA and investigators have already ruled this to be a justified use of force. So we'll see if any more information becomes available. But given that the case is closed, I don't know that we will learn any more circumstances about this particular defensive gun use. Finally, today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some strangers in Virginia who helped rescue a driver from their burning vehicle. This was in Henrico County near Richmond. Happened last Friday, about 5:30 in the afternoon on I-295. Susie Gorman was the first driver to stop. She saw a smoking car that was sort of stuck in the wooded median of I-295. She said, I parked and then I started running back towards the car and I was waving my arms. And she said, all these other vehicles were pulling over. She said, by the time I got to the vehicle, it was probably like 10 people there. And we were all trying to open the door. According to the Virginia State Police, the driver, a man named Quavell Tion Montgomery, had run off the road, had hit a tree, and he was stuck inside of his 2015 Nissan Altima. Gorman said some of the guys were just pounding with a bare fist, I mean, like bleeding with glass embedded in their fist. They were just awful, she said. They were just kicking and screaming and doing everything they could to open the windows. Because, again, the car is smoking. And I know I've talked about this before. My car burned up in 2016, and it was literally a matter of a couple of minutes from the time that I was in the car at the time, and it was really no more than maybe 2 or 3 minutes from the time I first saw that little wisp of white smoke underneath the hood, and I thought, uh-oh, is that steam? To my car being fully engulfed in flames. It can happen so fast. There were several individuals, again, who were involved in this effort to get the driver out. Ultimately, they were using hammers, other objects to try to break the glass. One man cut the airbags to get to the injured victim inside that locked car. They actually used and burned up a couple of fire extinguishers trying to put out the flames. Gorman said a quote, an angel who works for a company called the Blanchett Concrete Pumping pulled up to the scene. Benjamin Footer had just filled up the truck's water tank after leaving a nearby job site. Footer spoke to WTVR in Richmond. He said, I was in the Marine Corps for 8 years. He said, so I'm certainly not going to walk past a bad situation and not do anything. He said, I could see the flames coming through the windshield. It had melted the windshield slightly by that point. He said, everything happened so quickly, but I shoved a piece of steel in the steering column, and then I pushed my back against the windowsill of the door, which essentially lifted the steering column up and broke it, so then we could lift the steering wheel up out of the way. He said, but the firewall had his right shin pinched down. There was an off-duty nurse who was there who helped keep the victim's airway open until Henrico Fire and EMS arrived and were able to cut him out of the car. According to the Virginia State Police, it looks like Montgomery either experienced a medical emergency or fell asleep before he left the roadway. Said there were no signs of braking before the vehicle left the pavement, and there was medication that was consistent with seizure treatment that they found inside the car. He was transported to a local hospital for treatment of serious injuries. According to WTVR, his current condition is unknown. Footer said, I'd love to be able to see him and be like, man, I did my best for you. He said, I'm just so fortunate that I filled my water tank out before I left. Virginia State Police also specifically acknowledged a guy named Duke White Jr. who broke the vehicle's windows with his bare hands in order to give the driver some air. Sergeant Jessica Sheehan said in a statement that the state police is especially grateful to the citizens who stopped and risked their own safety to help Trooper Mills keep the driver alive until fire and EMS could arrive. Their quick actions, along with others who assisted, are credited with helping save the driver's life. And, you know, I mean, I know I've said this a couple of times before we talk about these instances, and, you know, it's one person, it's maybe two people who stop. And there are plenty of other drivers who get on the road, and that's somebody else's problem. I'm not equipped to deal with this. What would I do? For whatever reason, they don't stop. In this case, it sounds like there were, again, just a large number of people who not only stopped to help, but who had the expertise to know what to do, right? I'm thinking about that off-duty nurse who was able to help provide air to the driver, to the Marine veteran. Who said, I got a bunch of water here. I can use that to help tamp down the flames. Again, just a team effort among a group of strangers to help a stranger in need. So to all of those Good Samaritans who pulled off on the side of I-295 in Henrico County last Friday to save a stranger's life, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. As always, I want to thank you for being a part of the program. I am looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday of next week. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of Thursday, Friday, over the weekend. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. That includes the latest on lawsuits, the latest legislation. We've got, you know, a big bad gun ban bill introduced in Minnesota in response to the Annunciation shooting. And we've got, you know, again, culture war attacks on the right to keep and bear arms in our and gun owners themselves as well that we're covering at Bearing Arms. So be sure to check all that out. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. I'd like to thank John for joining as a VIP Platinum member yesterday. He sent me a very nice note, so thank you very much for that, John. And again, we'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.